Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And I remind you to listen to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA-FM, celebrating the 88 days of summer. Details at WEAA.org. And support for WEAA is provided in part by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at AAA.com/discounts. Before we launch into our conversation about the Zimmerman trial with Corey Day, just a couple of facts about this day in history. Two very important ones, I think, given where we are in today's world. On this day, on July 11th, in 1787, this is when the Three-Fifths Compromise, as they called it, was incorporated in the United States Constitution. And that meant, of course, the compromise that southern and northern states reached during the Philadelphia Convention happened on this day because the southern states wanted to count every slave that white people owned as a full person for purposes of representation. The northern states said, no, we want to count every slave because it's for taxation. So they came up with a three-fifths compromise. Every slave would count for three-fifths of a person in determining the vote and determining taxation. And it just goes to show that sometimes the whole world of justice and legislation don't always dovetail with the reality of justice and humanity. This was the beginning of sometimes when compromises maybe don't need to happen, people have to stand up. Talking about that, this is also the day in 1905, July 11th, when the Niagara Movement held its first meeting, a group led by W.E.B. Du Bois and William Monroe Trotter. This is a period, people have to remember in our history, when right after the Civil War, Reconstruction happened, black folks throughout the South took charge of a lot of governments, created equitable societies throughout the South. Then the segregation laws were instituted in 1890. The Klan came in. White supremacy came roaring back, not that it ever really left. And the answer to the response to that was the Niagara Movement that became later the NAACP. And it was on this day that this is also part of the battle between Du Bois and Booker T. Washington in that period. But at any rate, on this day was the day that the Niagara Movement met. To stand up to fight for equal rights in America. So these two days juxtaposed on July 11th. So maybe it's a day we can use maybe it should be a holiday on some sites for us to reflect on our society, especially given what's going on right now in Florida with the trial of Zimmerman. And we are joined by Corey Dade, contributing editor of The Root, where he's been covering the Zimmerman trial very intensely. Corey, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hi. Thank you, Mark.
And join us here, folks, at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to the Facebook page, which I'll be checking in a moment. But I do want to have you join us at 410-319-8888 with your reflections on what's happening here in this George Zimmerman trial, which should be going to jury today, right, Corey?
Well, it'll probably go to jury tomorrow.
Okay.
You have the state beginning opening arguments today at 1 o'clock Eastern time. And the defense is expected to make its, closing arguments.
Closing argument, right.
Make its closing arguments tomorrow. So the judge's goal is to get this to the jury by end of day Friday.
And so it'll be early next week when we'll probably get a decision. So, Corey, I'm curious your observations of what you're seeing right now. I mean, one of the things that, let me just put out what I was thinking. I've been saying this a lot on the air, and I'd just love to get your feedback on it. For those people in America who want to see, who think justice is served by Zimmerman being found guilty of manslaughter at the very least, it doesn't look good. I mean, I think that some people I've read who are legal scholars watching this trial are saying that given the case law of Florida, and given that this is, let's just start with that, we'll go to the next part next, that the prosecution has not made a case to convict him. And what's your sense? What's your analysis watching this trial?
Well, I definitely don't think the state proved its burden for second-degree murder. That's an intent crime that requires the state to get into the mind of the defendant and prove that, in this case, he acted with ill will, spite, hatred, depravity of mind. The state has not proven that. The state had thin evidence going in, and, you know, its fatal flaw was its inability to present a single shred of evidence about what the circumstances were the moment that gun fired, you know, what was actually happening. And the defense doesn't have a burden of proof, so it can offer
all manner of scenarios, and a good bit of what they offered has not been countered by the state. I think what the state did here is overcharge, and they charged the highest crime, knowing that if they have problems proving it, the jury very likely could be given instructions to consider lesser charges, in this case like manslaughter and aggravated assault, which carry a hefty penalty. You know, you're talking 20-plus years.
So they could convict on those grounds?
They could convict on those crimes, but here's the risk that the state takes here. The state has made, you know, a very forceful and certainly dramatic argument in the opening that this was second-degree murder. And under that circumstance, they would have to come back to the jury and say, you know what, you know, I know we said second-degree murder, but guess what, you know, manslaughter is on the table now, and, you know, he may not be guilty of second-degree murder, but he's guilty of something.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always play well with jurors.
Right. I think that this is, the danger here, and one of the people said in our program when this trial first started, who was a law professor from the University of Maryland, does a lot of work in our prisons, Doug Colbert, he said he was not confident that prosecutors are used to working with the police and don't usually act in this regard, especially around an African-American victim that they're not going to prosecute this thing in very logical, smart ways or to the full extent they could. And there's a lot of people thinking that at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit unfair, not speaking to the law professor's point, but I think it's a little bit unfair for people to start sort of turning on the prosecution and showing its fangs. You know, the prosecution has to work with what it has. You know, we know that the investigation was questionable to begin with, and by that I mean the Sanford Police Department's investigation of the case itself. The way they handled it, there were issues around its ability to collect evidence when it was raining out there on the scene. It waited 44 days before it arrested George Zimmerman, and
right,
only after political pressure and public pressure. But I think that the prosecution went with what it had. I think what's more evident here is that the prosecution appeared to actually go away from its sort of original strategy. And it started to go after, certainly in the cross-examination of defense witnesses, started presenting any number of possible ways in which the events might have unfolded that night, particularly when it cross-examined Vincent DiMaio, the renowned the forensic pathologist that the defense called. And, you know, when the state continued to do that, you know, all it did is, you know, open up plausible, reasonable doubt. The more the state started talking about all these different possible scenarios other than what George Zimmerman said,
right,
shows that even the state believes that there are multiple scenarios. So under reasonable doubt, you know, the tie goes to the defense, so to speak.
Let me just read this email that came in. Folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888 for what we have left in our segment here, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Sheldon writes in, I hate to say it, but Zimmerman will almost certainly be acquitted. The way the case was framed, who called help, who was on top, it's a reasonable doubt case. Unfortunately, our criminal justice system is simply incapable of addressing the real issues here. Why did Zimmerman suspect Martin in the first place? Why did he feel the need to provoke a confrontation by getting out of the car? I can well believe Martin felt threatened, panicked, and sucker-punched a make-my-day vigilante who had a gun and was prepared to use it. The real problem here is how to produce males who do not feel their manhood depends on being the local neighborhood watch Rambo, seeing bad guys under every hoodie.
That person summed up the concerns of many people nationwide. You know, I think it's important to realize that. Let me back up. I would say that this case is unique. The fact that people are able to watch it live on television or watch it stream on the web actually can serve as a check on people's sensibilities. You know, people have watched this case and seen what they wanted to see. and ignored things that they didn't want to see in this. But when you watch it live, what it says is that those sentiments that are expressed just now that you read can't always be proven in a court of law, at least not in this particular case. And, you know, so for example, you know, spotting someone and looking at them as suspicious and following them, that's not illegal, at least not under these circumstances in Florida. You know, the self-defense, so what they call Castle Doctrine in Florida, is very specific. And so at every turn, I think people have wanted to inject all manner of evidence into this case that actually can't be argued.
Right.
There's a mitigating factor here when you actually watch the trial. All your imaginations about what should be argued often cannot be.
And then there's also the very popular sentiment going around right now that if this thing was switched, if somehow Trayvon had killed Zimmerman and this was the same jury and trial, we'd be having a very different day.
Yep, that's another scenario that's been posited. If you reverse roles, or if Trayvon had been a black female instead of a black male, all these different scenarios,
right,
under which people often say, you know, Zimmerman would have been convicted hands down. I think at the end of the day, you know, you have to go on the case that your investigators brought you, and that's what the prosecution did. And I'm not defending the prosecution.
No, I know, yeah.
They had every incentive to get a conviction here.
Well, Corey Dade, I appreciate all the work you do. We always love having you on the air with us, a contributing editor of The Root. And we, when the jury decision comes down, we hope you can join us there for an analysis.
I'd be happy to, Mark. It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much, Corey.
Thank you.
Corey Dade, who is contributing editor of The Root, and we will certainly come back with a special as soon as the jury makes its decision, whatever that decision is. We will be on the air immediately during our time slot, 9 to 11 a.m., whether it's Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and deal with this in a very special conversation to see where it takes us all. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, we're going to look at Station North Arts. Can artists really live there? Is it for both black and white artists? What about the community that already exists there? Stay with us. We'll be right back.